Hi, this is Ken Miller, and there's an old saying that you can't get blood from a stone. And I suppose that applies to fossils as well, because after all, fossils are formed by a process in which bone, shell, or tissue are gradually replaced by minerals from the soil, so that by the time a fossil is formed like this one, all that is left is the shape of the bone that gave rise to it. And that's what paleontologists have worked on their entire careers. More recently, however, we've changed our opinions about some fossils. It turns out that some of them contain important cellular, biochemical, and even molecular clues as to the life of the organism that gave rise to them. We owe that appreciation to the work of a scientist who had a hunch, had the determination to follow it up, and had a little bit of luck as well. This is Mary Schweitzer, a professor at North Carolina State University and curator of paleontology at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences. More than a decade ago, she gave some samples of fossilized dinosaur bones to a colleague who cut them into slices thin enough to look at under the microscope. Here's how Mary describes what happened next.
So she set up my slide in the back of the room, and in the process of her talk, somebody said, "What's the oldest bone you've ever looked at?" And she said, "Well, I have it set up back there. It's a dinosaur bone." And so one of the vets came up to her after we're looking through it, and he said, "Do you know you have blood cells in that section?" So she didn't say much, and she brought it back to me, and I looked at it, and I kind of got goosebumps, because it looked exactly like nucleated red blood cells, and you only saw these little structures in the middle of blood vessel channels.
Incredibly, Dr. Schweitzer had seen something that neither she nor anybody else would have expected. The dinosaur fossils still contain blood vessels and red blood cells, as you can see in this photomicrograph from her lab. Her work didn't stop there. In 2002, working with the famous paleontologist Jack Horner, she was part of a team analyzing the oldest Tyrannosaurus rex fossil ever discovered, a specimen they nicknamed Bob. But when Mary examined the interior of some of Bob's bones, she was in for a shock. She found a special kind of bone called medullary bone. Why was that a big deal? I'll let Mary tell you herself.
But in birds, that cortical bone, the shafts of the long bones, when they're inlaid, it is lined with a very special bone type. And that bone type exists for one reason, and that's to store and mobilize calcium so that their shells can get made.
So, and when you say when they're inlaid, you mean when the female is about to lay eggs?
Yeah, when she's producing eggs in her body, they go from the ovaries all the way through the shell gland, and when they get the shell deposited on the egg is when they get laid.
So that led you to two conclusions about Bob, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those
Bob
were what?
Bob needed a new name.
Because?
Bob was female and Bob was inlay. And so we changed the name to Bobette.
So the oldest known T-Rex was actually a girl, and Bobette, as she's now known, was about to lay eggs. But the real excitement of this work comes from the way in which Dr. Schweitzer has been able to extract fragments of proteins and other large molecules from her fossils. One of these was collagen, a fiber-like protein found in connective tissue. In 2009, she reported on the amino acid sequences of collagen fragments from several different fossil species and compared them to sequences of collagen from living organisms. She found that they were most similar to birds and crocodiles, confirming the evolutionary position of modern birds as closely related to dinosaurs. Now, some of this work has been pretty controversial, and other scientists have suggested that the proteins found within these fossils might have resulted from modern contamination. In other words, organisms like bacteria might have grown on the fossils and produced some of the proteins extracted from these bones in the lab. Schweitzer, however, has worked hard to eliminate this possibility and has given samples of material to other labs to test and verify. In the best of all worlds, this is exactly how science is done. If your work has critics, you open the lab to those critics and invite them to check your results over and over again. And that's exactly what she's done. Now, the final verdict isn't quite in yet, but at this point, Schweitzer's work has stood up very well to careful testing by other labs. As she points out, the very fact that bacteria don't make collagen, one of the proteins she analyzed, makes it unlikely that her results were due to bacterial contamination. What this means is that we can expect a lot of other scientists to try the same trick, to extract proteins from fossil bones and then compare these molecules to similar ones found in other fossils and even in living organisms. This has already happened with DNA. An international team based in Germany recently used DNA extracted from fossil bones of Neanderthals and was able to reconstruct portions of their genomes large enough to be compared with modern humans. What they found is pretty provocative. It suggests that somewhere between 1 and 4% of the genomes of humans native to Europe and Asia was actually derived from Neanderthal DNA. That suggests that modern humans and Neanderthals lived in close contact and may even have interbred. Today, we can't be sure where all this will lead. But in a way, that's what makes it so exciting. Molecular biologists, cell biologists, and biochemists are beginning to knock on the doors of natural history museums and asking if they might take a look at their fossil specimens. Stay tuned. A new window has been opened on the past, and before long, we just might have to rewrite the story of our own species and many others. Thanks for listening. Good luck in your studies.